This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, February 16th, 2011.
Today is Wednesday, February 16th, employee assembly meeting. Time is 12:18 p.m. Calling the meeting to order. Are there any late additions? I know that you wanted to talk about COMCOM, so I'll add that on there. The Communications Committee.
COMCOM.
Any other late additions to the agenda?
Just a quick superintendent mention, and Sue and I can give a really quick update on the civility behaviors.
Great. So we'll turn it right over to Tim and Gilbert, who will talk with us a little bit, give us an update on community restrictions and mental health initiatives. Thanks for coming.
Great. Thank you, Diane. I'm going to stand over here at the smart board to kind of walk you through a presentation. Door open or closed at this point?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
If it's distracting to you, then
yeah. Close. I find it. Others. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Tim Marshall. I'm Director of Mental Health Initiatives at Gannett Health Services. And the presentation that we're going to share with you today has two main components to it. I'm going to provide you an overview of the university's mental health framework, primarily as it relates to students, but this is also a framework which we've talked about in relation to staff and faculty. And as we go through it, you can be thinking about how would we fill in the elements that I'm going to be describing if we were really doing a presentation on the needs of staff and faculty. After that, Gilbert Delgado is going to provide an update on where we are in relation to our means restriction study, and I'll be kind of teeing that up with some of this background context. So, Gilbert, if you can go to the first slide, please. So, what I'm going to be walking through is a diagram, which we our mental health framework, which we sometimes, for shorthand, refer to as the wheel. And this is a new diagram that summarizes a lot of things that we've been pursuing for a number of years, as well as some of the things that have been put in place during the past year in response to the suicide crisis of last year. So these strategies that I'll be describing all reflect our philosophy of creating Cornell as an ever more caring community. Next, please. So the wheel itself has multiple components. I'm going to just list these, and I'm going to walk through some of the elements. So fostering a healthy educational environment, promoting life skills and resilience, increasing help-seeking behavior, identifying people in need of care, provide mental and mental health services, deliver coordinated crisis management, and restrict access to means of suicide. So I'm going to walk around the wheel here, and you'll see that we're going to end up at the means restriction element, which is where Gilbert will step in. So the next one. When we talk about fostering a healthy educational environment, there's a number of elements to this. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is that this wheel that I'm using is an adaptation of a model developed by the Jet Foundation and the Suicide Prevention Resource Center, which are national organizations which help shape the higher education community's thinking around suicide prevention and mental health promotion. We added this slide right here, this piece of the puzzle, because it's not built into the national model, but we think that it's really the foundation of much of our efforts. When we look at our overall approach to student mental health and well-being overall, we think about aspects that are campus-wide in their orientation. So the fact that we now have in our strategic plan around excellence in education an explicit reference to the importance of student mental health and well-being as a foundation for academic and personal pursuits. There are a number of elements, and I'm going to walk through these very quickly. We have a Council on Mental Health and Welfare. There's a review of the academic environment that faculty are pursuing right now. We have leadership on a number of levels from students, the Lift Your Spirits events from last spring, and there are going to be more things happening this spring. Looking at our overall climate on campus in relation to respect and civility and inclusivity are all elements of this, reducing bias. Alcohol initiatives, looking at the way alcohol can negatively impact our student environment is one of the dimensions we look at. And also the natural environment, thinking about The research that shows the restorative benefit psychologically, emotionally of our natural surroundings is an important part of our overall approach, particularly in light of the discussion around means restriction. So next, please. So promoting life skills and resilience pertains to our efforts to help students not only recognize when each other may be struggling, but for the individuals, fostering increased capacities to deal with the stressors inherent in life and in college life in particular. So there's a number of things that we're doing to foster social connections between students and between students, staff, and faculty. Developing life skills such as study skills and time management, stress management approaches, and a number of efforts around fostering student leadership capacities. Next, please. Increasing help-seeking behavior. Cornell Alliance Matters, a student group which is working very hard to reduce stigma around help-seeking behavior and mental illness. A number of leadership statements. David Skorton came out and said to students, if you learn nothing else when you're at Cornell, learn to seek help. And we see that played out in the Real Students, Real Stories video that all incoming first-year students see now and began last summer. And where students are talking about their upper-class students are talking about their own experience of seeking help, and David Skorton talks about that as well. EARS is our peer counseling program out of the Dean of Students, which is an effort to decrease some of the barriers around seeking help. And I would say our Let's Talk program at Gannett, where we place counselors around campus for walk-in hours, is another effort in that regard. Next one, please. So identifying people in need of care. This is a quite a long list. Some of you are very familiar, Celia in particular, with our Notice and Respond program. Our efforts around educating staff, faculty, and students around recognizing when someone may be in distress, how to talk to them, and where to refer them. And one of those, the student's version, is now called Friend to Friend. We have handbooks, a faculty handbook, a staff handbook that's going to be coming out shortly, and our materials for parents as well along these lines. And just a number of resources on campus from residents, life staff, advising offices, screening efforts we have out of Gannett, and also the University Alert Team, where we try to assemble information about students of concern and try to develop coordinated responses when there are campus-wide concerns about students. So next one, please. Providing integrated medical and mental health services, which we do at Gannett, includes through our medical service. We have primary care screening, and sometimes people, especially international students, feel more comfortable coming in and talking to our general clinicians rather than counselors per se. We have a system set up in CAPS where we do same-day triage, trying to get people in as quickly as possible. We are now open on Saturdays, which is new since last spring, and I mentioned the Let's Talk program already. Next, please. We have a long-standing effort to coordinate crisis management services around campus. There's a 24-hour phone service we have at Gannett where people can call for concerns, where students can call about concerns about themselves. Students, staff, and faculty can call with concerns about others. And as the faculty, Linda, I don't know if you want to say anything about the faculty staff assistance program transition. But
we talked about it last.
Okay, you're up to speed. Mm-hmm. Okay, so and then the police, the local suicide crisis line is part of the overall 24-hour safety net. And our crisis managers, community support teams, and certainly our coordination with CUBA Medical Center is all part of our crisis management system. And then last is restricting access to means of suicide. And this is something that is at the forefront right now because we're talking about the bridges and trying to reduce access to jumping locations. But restricting access as a public health approach is something we've been doing for a long time in terms of locking up laboratory chemicals, restricting access to weapons on campus. These are all part of a means restriction approach. But with that, I'm going to turn to the topic of the bridges, and Gilbert will fill you in on where we are at this point.
Thank you, Ted. Starting off, I'm not sure if all of you heard, there was a story in the Boston Globe that the firm that we had originally contracted with, OfficeStop, who was doing the bridges, was falling apart internally. But it was a good thing that the breakup was kind of already happening for quite a while, and through some pretty long negotiations, we finally ended up with the half of the team that we had always been working with. So the new firm is called Nadal. So in case there was confusion, if you agree, well, I thought it was OfficeStop. It's called Nada, and Nader Tarani, the lead designer, is the person that we're still working with. He's got the full team intact, and we're delighted to be able to say that. So, and you know, this statement by Nader, I think, kind of captures why I think we did the right decision in picking these folks and sticking with them. We want these interventions to disappear to the foreground, the importance of the view, the historic aspect of certain bridges and the prospects, and the city landscape and campus. And that's a quote by Nader Tarani. The designer that's working on these bridges for us. To give you a feeling for where we are right now, and where we were and where we're going to be, I think this is important. Today is approximate. We're just about there. We will continue to make the May, I think it's 31st date, for submission to the city, but we have completed this. This is the first stage called assessment and research. And this is about a couple of months where the architects came to town, tried to learn about our area, about the specific bridges, and also to explore the technology of means restriction. So taking a look at what that looked like, we had public input. We had meetings with both the here on campus, also out in the community. Derek Troy down below. There's a listing there of all the different forums that we actually reached out to get information regarding our community. Mm-hmm. And then just very quickly, they explored materials that can be utilized to construct means restriction. This is what we currently have now. This is a starting point. And the Department of Transportation, more solid, rigid means of containment. Again, at DOT, we would probably never do that, but, you know, just to be sure that all ideas were explored, barbed fences, kind of in a very classic way of how to provide a barrier, plexiglass, I mean, or glass, to your left, at the top of Rockefeller Plaza or Center, even what is happening in some of the very spectacular bridges, this is Golden Gate in San Francisco, we just use a net down below, just to be sure that we're not reinventing the wheel, that at least we also capitalize on all the ideas that are out there, expanded metal. And the one that they seem to be kind of thinking that holds a lot of promise is this idea of a tensile steel mesh. I've seen many of these. It's like a wire fabric. That at a certain distance you can't see. But if you came up close to it, it's like a fishnet of some sort. But it's made of stainless steel, very fine. And here's an example where you can barely not see it. This is in Austria. And this fabric here is actually stretched like that. And you can see it at a distance, it starts to actually go away. Where are we today? So we finished that one first section. We actually took a look at it. And now we're here. We're at a stage where we're developing three different ways of looking at the three basic types of bridges that we have. I think I'm going to mention this last step. This is where we are today. So if you look at, it's called the pre-schematic design phase. So three basic bridge types, and then three alternatives for each. And we do this to be sure that we've explored different possibilities, that we don't lock into a design up front. And it also allows us to have a structured but collaborative discussion with the community. You know, so it's not like, well, you guys put this up behind closed doors. That's not what we're doing. We're developing a series of responsible alternatives to share and discuss with the community. Now, to look at the three different types, you've got vehicular bridges that are heavy, larger type bridges, and then you've got the smaller pedestrian bridges. That you would treat differently, and Nada had looked that, and then we have the stone arch bridge down below, which is unique unto itself. It's a different character, and we have to treat that one specially. So we've broken that out as a special one. So let's take a look at the Stewart Avenue bridge to give you a general idea as to what these things are. Now I have to preface this by saying that these are not the pre-schematics. These are just explorations, you know, kind of thing. Well, what do you think about this? Just kicking the can around. At some point, they will actually bring this down to three different types of variations for that bridge, that will actually help us make a responsible decision based on, you know, a much deeper level of investigation. So just to let you know how they actually structured their thinking, they took three of the materials that I showed you before, the bars, tensile steel mesh, and glass, right? And then then tested those materials across the different bridge types. And then they looked at very basic different approaches. What would be a net fully underneath the bridge? Another one could be two nets on the side. One could be enclosure of a vertical, more of a kind of orthodox way of doing this. And one would be a full enclosure, which is like a Department of Transportation thing that I told you would never do. But I'm going to show you an example that might actually say, well, maybe we should take a look at that. Because we have much more artfully than the Department of Transportation. So Stewart Avenue Bridge, and that's in its wintry glory. Okay, so here's one option that looks at building on each side, you know, and how that would look at dramatically. And then we have an option that looks at the vertical one, but not just straight vertical. But what would happen if, in fact, we actually, you know, played with the geometry of the height? So in fact, it becomes more organic, a little not as rigid as just straight fence, quite across. There's different ways to how to, I mean, maybe even, you know, modulate the distance between the bars, you know, in such a way that you're getting these like subtle transitory meanings that are not, you know, that take it from a rail to something artful and more beautiful. How about if we put a net underneath the entire thing where it was detached from part of the bridge, but in fact attached to the gorge, and made out of this tensile stainless steel fabric, you wouldn't even see it. Right? Stone arch, again, a different condition. You know what? You know this one. You know, again, this is a very developmental. What if we put up a glass panels? The stone arch bridge, in its architectural realization in terms of the handrails, is something that is presents a challenge. But you know, there's glasses that you can get that have a low carbon content and that don't have any green in them. It's almost perfectly clear. I don't believe glass will be something that we end up with just because of the maintenance issues that it has. But what if? I mean, this is the part where we explore a lot of options to be sure that we haven't left any stone uncovered. And then here's the fancy schmancy Department of Transportation version. What would happen if we took a look at enclosure? And this would be for the Cascadilla trolley bridge. Then if we get over the, well, you can't encumber vision, but what if you just took it up and made like a cathedral with an oculus above, and then by actually how you articulate it, create a place to sit and create the bridge as a place to be, as opposed to just, you know, where the means restriction starts taking on multiple means, not just the straight off, oh, that's there obviously to stop suicide. No, it's there for a variety of other reasons, right? So, just to reaffirm that, you know, today we're here, the pre-schematic alternative, where it's an exploration of alternatives with sufficient technical and cost data to make an informed decision on the type of means restriction for each bridge. Then somewhere we're going to hone in on a solution for each bridge, and then that will be taken into final schematics, which will be submitted to both the city of Ithaca and our trustees. Here's another view of that. In fact, this slide was supposed to be the one you just saw, but what happens when you look at something at midnight? You know, what happens when you look through this? Here's the seating area. There's the higher bit, and as you can see, the geometry is not rigid, it's somewhat more organic, and it starts to maybe echo what's happening behind it. So even though it's metal, even though it's rigid, it can have a lyrical sense to it. That in fact becomes something of beauty as opposed to something that is just quite strictly a fact. So what's coming up next? And I kind of like the way those weather boards are going to be kind of designed by accident thing. The next major milestone, I just want to keep you focused, March 2nd, or the first week in March, is when we actually roll out these pre-schematics. And what we'll have is there'll be various alternatives, at least three per bridge type. There might be a couple little extra ones, depending on what the architect comes up with, but that's what they're contracted to do. We will have campus presentations. We will have community presentations. And there'll be certainly enough avenues for us to hear what's on your mind regarding what we're doing. And with that, we'll open it up to a discussion if you have time.
I like the idea of having bridges with dual purposes because it invites population on those bridges, which I would think would be a competitive measure in itself. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, at first we saw that, I have to say, that no one's ever going to buy for a full enclosed system.
Right.
But then you said, well, let's just push that a little bit and see what happens.
But I mean, even if you just took that concept of having a bridge that could serve as a social spot, obviously we can't do it all year round. I mean, you have weather. But even that in itself is kind of an interesting addition to the.
And I think this also goes back to who we picked as a designer.
Yes, right.
I mean, have we hired a civil engineer? Nothing against engineers, but you know, it's not a straight fence problem, a security problem. We looked at it in terms of a multiplicity of different values that I think is what we get to.
Yeah.
Well, what if it were enclosed? And what if we played with the geometry? And what if we made a place to sit? You know?
Right.
My question is more for Tim. In terms of your presentation, what do you think are the top takeaways we should be taking back to staff, to employees, just for communication purposes?
So I think there's a couple of things. One is that the university is taking a comprehensive approach to student mental health and suicide prevention in particular. So one of the things that I'm trying to dispel when I talk to various groups, I'll sometimes hear people say, you know, the university thinks it's going to solve the problem of suicide just by putting fences up on these bridges. They're mistaken. They need to do things to address student mental health. So one of the main things that I want everyone to understand is that there is an array of strategies that we're pursuing that emphasize both mental health broadly and also the role of the entire campus community. So the idea that we all are potential eyes and ears that can recognize and respond to those who are having emotional struggles is an important part of the message. The means restriction piece is one part of this comprehensive approach. That's the main thing. Comprehensive, everyone has a role, this is one part of it. On the means restriction, one of the main concerns that people have, I would say there are two that come up. One is that people will say, if someone's going to kill themselves, they're just going to go off and do it some other way. So this is pointless. It doesn't work. The research is actually quite compelling that means restriction works, that means matters, because when individuals are suicidal, in many cases, the final decision to die by suicide has an element of impulsivity. And barriers provide an opportunity to slow people's thinking down rather than having the ease of being able to climb over a barrier. So what the data suggest from multiple studies is that when you put barriers up in locations where people have been jumping, that you can radically reduce or eliminate jumping deaths from those locations. But it's also important that if you have other sites nearby, that you address them as well. So that's why we're looking at our bridges as a single site, in a sense. And we're not looking just at one bridge where there's been a lot of suicides, because all these bridges are risk factors, in a sense, because of that. So to distill that, the research shows that means restriction works. It matters. So comprehensive approach, means matters, and that there is, and the other thing is that people say, well, you know, you're going to destroy the views. And there is a concern. These are natural treasures that we all value, the views of the bridges and from the bridges. And that is something that we are taking, the design process is taking into very serious consideration. And we ask people, particularly until the pre-schematics come out, you know, to wait until we're seeing the options. The choices may include, you know, the substructures, the nettings that don't impair the views from the bridges at all. But aesthetics matter. To those of us that are involved, we care about both saving lives and preserving aesthetics, and there will be some balancing that takes place.
So it looks like in the presentation there's going to be will there be community campus presentations and forums?
Absolutely. That will be scheduled now.
Okay, all right. I want to put something in our employee newsletter.
When's that going to go
out?
Well,
we have one going out very soon, but I can put it in the next one. When do you think the meetings will be?
March 7th.
So the meeting's going to be on March 2nd, and there's going to be four of them that day, three to four of them that day, and probably four.
We should put it in this newsletter. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, so the thing is, what we're trying to pin down right now is the times and locations of those. Two will be downtown. Two will be up here, most likely. So as soon as we get that information, we'll let you know. But what's your printing publishing deadline?
Well, it's electronic, so I wanted it to go out this week, but what I can do is say, look, meetings are scheduled for March 2nd, and then where do they go for details?
So one of the things that was a means restriction website, and I think that probably what you should do is publish in your newsletter the means restriction study website, and the message in this letter that you're sending out can be March 2nd is the date for the pre-schematics, times and locations for the public presentations. Will be available at the site in the coming week.
Right, and that was the means restriction study. If you can just give me the website.
Well, I think it was on the end of yours.
Why don't we can send it to you.
That's it, yeah.
Yep, there it is.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
David, did you have a question?
Yeah. do you guys foresee any resistance or issues when you have to meet and present this to the city?
No, we've been working with the city so far. We've already had like three meetings, and I have a partner on that side who with the planning board that actually. I haven't seen resistance in terms of not wanting to see what we got. In terms of supporting what we're going to do, we'll have to get there when we get there.
I would just, you know, hate to see them say, oh, we hate this and have to start all over again. You know, and I doubt it's going to happen. But, you know.
Well, the one thing we didn't really explain much about is the planning structure. So there's a city university work group that's been dealing with this, since last fall. And so the city officials from the mayor on down have been apprised and involved in these conversations. So there won't be any surprises.
Right.
Will there be concerns from the city? There will be concerns about aesthetics. There will be concerns about cost. There will be various concerns. And, you know, the complexity of this ranges from the way it looks to how you clean things to how do rescue personnel get in there and how do you deal with snowstorms. And there's a lot that we're having to take into consideration. And these city engineers are real important partners in that.
I can't imagine how a decision would be made between
Bob, have you ever been to a sausage making?
But and it seems like it's the cleaning issue that you just raised. If we have a barrier that's beneath, there are going to be people throwing cups and bottles and everything.
Leaves.
Yes, that too. Nature.
Yeah.
But I was thinking more about fraternity brothers. Yeah, that's complicated.
Let's talk about the size of the mesh
school. Well, the mesh they're looking at right now is about 2 inches, roughly.
They have some larger ones.
Some larger ones, too, and they still haven't really honed on which size. Mm-hmm. We did talk about that in terms of what happens when it snows. Well, it actually looks beautiful, they say, when it snows. But, yeah, leaves and twigs and all that.
Is the funding... is the city expected to contribute in the costs to this? And I'm wondering if that is going to provide a wrinkle because, you know, everybody's budget is, you know, stretched thin and we're dealing with taxpayer dollars there. And
I think those details would be down.
Okay. So it's not clear how it's all being funded.
Yeah.
Those are questions that the senior officials in the city and the university are contemplating.
Yeah.
There aren't clear answers yet. We're not even sure yet what the price would be on any of these designs. The charge to the design firm is very clear that we need something that's cost effective. So they realize that they don't have just a sort of a wish list. They could do anything that they can dream of. They know we're going to be dealing with budget reality.
Some of the questions you may not be able to answer from staff and employees point of view. Most of the sort of attention, as you mentioned, has been primarily for students and safety. Is there evidence that there's more of a need for, say, means restrictions for staff? Is there evidence that more staff members may be actually vulnerable? I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. So when we look at the last 20 years of data on suicides from the bridges, half of the deaths that occurred from these bridges were Cornell students. The other half were community members. Some of those were people that drove from out of town to see this because they see this as an iconic suicide destination. Out of those community members, there were members of Cornell staff and faculty.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it is a concern.
It is.
It is a community concern.
That's correct.
I have a question. Does the question raise why do they suicide? You know, why do they jump in the bridge? And is it due to the mental health? And does the question raise in the study, in the research program?
So the
yeah, my question is: does this question raise? You know, this particular question, why? Why does people jump, you know, why people jump in the bridge, and is it due to the mental health problem?
Okay, so...
And if that question is raised, you know, like, how do you solve the problem, you know, and what is the answer, you know?
So these are very important central questions, and let me try to distill the answer in a somewhat oversimplified way. When you look at, in retrospect, when you look at individuals that die by suicide, in the majority of cases, what you find is that there's an underlying mental health problem, like depression or bipolar disorder. The moment that the reason that individuals choose to die is very difficult to predict and even to understand in retrospect, because when you look at all of the people that have depression, for example, it's a relatively small number that choose to kill themselves. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard to separate out why this one person does versus the other. We sometimes find that there are triggering factors, there are life circumstances which interact with an underlying mental health problem to lead someone to take that act. Part of the equation is also not just maybe an underlying disposition, such as depression, which is leaving them hopeless, life circumstances, which is leading them into a crisis where they feel unable to look towards the future. But in addition to that, having access to the means to act on their suicidal impulses is part of the equation. So if someone has ready access to a firearm, or ready act, when we're doing an assessment as a clinical psychologist, I ask people who are suicidal, do you have access to pills or weapons? How are you thinking about this? The fact is, in our community, the ready access to highly lethal means is our bridges. Half of the students who have died in the past 20 years at Cornell by suicide jumped off of bridges. That is so 50% of our suicide deaths among students have been from the bridges. This is unprecedented in any other community. Because of our geography and because of the nature of these bridges, the means of choice in many cases have. So that this is why we feel it's imperative to address that dimension of this. Because even if someone then decides to try to attempt to take their lives by some other means, one of the means that they're more likely to attempt to use would be pills, which is a less lethal approach because you're more likely to survive that type of attempt. And the other thing that I would add is that one of the problems of having people die by jumping into the gorges is that it creates a high visibility of those deaths, which increases the risk of imitative behavior by other people.
Do you find, like when you look at the last 20 years, is there a certain time of the year that this happens? Like, is it mostly in the spring, like during finals week, or is it just totally random? Or
it's really been quite spread out, but what I would say is that when you look nationally at college student suicides, that February and March are the months where you see most of them. But and in fact, last year,
yeah, that's where we had the same on the faculty and staff side. We had we had the most, you know, not actual suicides, but scares during March.
Well, you can look at everything from seasonal affective disorder. You know, there's a lot of potential variables that contribute to it. Yes.
This is like a really minor question in comparison to these others. In these designs, does anyone take into account the effects of the flight of birds?
I was thinking about the birds sort of too.
I haven't heard that as an issue, and I think it's a good observation.
Issues about wildlife have been raised. Birds in particular, I think, is some of the bird flight issue.
Well, it's particularly naughty because, of course, the more invisible you make it to us, it's still visible to them, you know, and anyhow.
Like my sliding glass door.
The glass door.
So I think that's all the time we have for questions, but can people email you if they have other questions you want?
If you want to circulate my email, my contact information, you know, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Do you want me to stay here? Stay for like 20 minutes? Okay.
What's the projected date of completion? Do we even have one?
We're focused on the May submission date.
You really need to see the whole picture.
You know, we did figure it out, but I just don't know what else is on my head. Here we go.
Thank you, guys.
Pizza was good.
All right, so moving on to our next agenda item, we want to talk a little bit about shoe leather outreach. So basically, we're expanding EA. We've got 13 seats to fill for next year. I don't know how many people who were at the end of their term are planning on running again, but we will have 13 seats to fill. And we're doing a lot of outreach to the time clocks and kind of the union representative staff on campus. We need to do outreach to other areas. Just starting to make a plan on how to do that. So Curtis, who's our head of our elections committee, you should probably kind of start convening maybe once the folks who are returning and start thinking about some plans, but we can talk about that here a little bit about who and how we can outreach to. But I know some of us have taken kind of the lead on talking with the time clock folks, so can some other people kind of jump in and start thinking about how or who we could talk to in other areas? For example, we don't have representation from the vet school.
I actually made a list of the places where we don't have representation.
Oh, look at you. We'll jump right in.
ILR, Vet, Johnson School, Law School, Facilities, Finance, Alumni Affairs and Development, and Planning and Budget. Those are the major categories, those areas where we're not currently represented.
Do we have somebody from Human Ecology?
And Human Ecology. Thank you, I missed that one.
NA. Well, yeah, we do have.
We do have AAP.
Would it make sense to outreach maybe to HRE in those areas to ask them what they think the best outreach method might be?
We are sending flowers.
Which is awesome.
Flowers. Wow. Flyers to the HR reps in other areas.
and Michelle are to be taking care of that.
Linda, is there a list of kind of the point HR person for each area on campus?
Yeah, you can ask Mary for that because she keeps that.
Right.
In terms of distribution, so maybe she could send something, have something sent to that list to say we've increased our membership and we'd really like to have you as a member.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Oh. Yes, it is.
Oh,
awesome.
Oh. First, I thought it was typing.
So Mary would have that list?
Yeah, Mary would have it.
I've been in touch with Pete Lino over in Grounds,
mm-hmm.
and he was not really receptive to, they don't really do time park meetings or any type of those kind of meetings. So, but he was, I sent flyers to him and he was going to put them in mailboxes and put them up at the time park.
Okay. And I think part of it is we do a lot of communication by email, and I think we need to actually go out and start having meetings with people, and I know that that's difficult because we're all very busy, but you've got what, a 10 on your list there?
3, 4, 5, yep.
Can we get everyone to commit to going to one place? That's something that we think is doable in the next couple weeks. All right, so I will try and find out who the lead HR people are in those groups and then assign everyone to a place and we'll get going there and start.
Can you do it as a Google Doc?
I can try and do it as Google Doc.
And then everybody can just sign up.
If everybody will sign up, but nobody
she
ever signs up.
She is signing people up. Did you miss that part?
Well, no, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you notice, it might make sense, you know, like, well, hey, that's right across. That's
right. Right. And I can do that. I just don't want, I feel like we're very passive about it. And if I just send something out and people don't sign up, so if I just say, I mean, obviously, yes, ILR is across from you, so it would make sense for you or Leslie to go to ILR, and it would make sense for, you know, David to go somewhere over his end of campus and me to go to the law school, and I will certainly do that, but I just want to get people signed up and get it moving and not waste time with trying to pin people down. And then people will obviously make their own schedule of when they're going to talk to someone, but at least say, this is your person, and then the check back in to say, yeah, I've talked to my person.
And this is kind of like the same presentation that I'll give, like, Kathy's owner. We're ready, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With the talking points that I sent out to everybody.
Right.
Yep.
Is that our final? Do we have
the second one that I sent is the final draft.
Okay.
Yep.
So I can set that up
mm-hmm.
anytime.
Yep.
I'm thinking that in terms of if we're going to send emails or something to the HR leads, a lot of times they get so much that they don't really read them.
Mm-hmm.
So you may want to see if Mary can even give you guys
numbers,
like 5 or 10 minutes of the HR council meeting,
mm-hmm.
and that's where all the HR leads from colleges and units go.
And when are those?
They're usually Wednesdays, usually around now.
Okay.
Like, I think it's like 12 to 1:30 or something.
Like monthly or
weekly or biweekly. Okay. They're relatively frequent.
Okay.
So maybe on an off Wednesday, a couple of us can go in and have a conversation,
mm-hmm.
and then there's another HR lead meeting that happens on Wednesday mornings, that's all the HR leads for all the administrative units.
Mm-hmm.
And so that represents well over 2,000 people, and there's all the HR leads for all the different areas, like 23 of them, that we could probably, Juliette, you'd be the contact to get us on that, but I get on that for other things too, and I'd be happy if you wanted me to get onto that, we could do that.
Okay.
So the HR, are you confident that the HR is going to be enough of a conduit to get the information out? Or is there something else that needs to be done as well? Because I know HR doesn't always have connection directly with their constituents. Because they're, you know, so.
Well, I think part of
the. What are your thoughts on that in terms of, you know?
I think part of the question that we will need to ask is, do you have a regular mechanism by which you get out to your departments? Like, I know arts and sciences, for example, they have department manager meetings. The HR leads have meetings with the department managers,
oh, okay.
and those department managers can bring it back to the unit.
Right.
So maybe it's a question of us having a conversation with that HR lead who says, I meet monthly with the department managers, and you come to this meeting for 10 minutes, and then they bring it back to their unit.
Okay.
So that, I think, is
right.
the goal. I don't think we are going to get the HR managers to kind of take ownership of this, but at least give us the forum to
okay.
present.
Right. Okay.
I think we should try to have that meeting before our next meeting.
Mm-hmm. So I will go back and try and email Mary and see if we can get at least that information from her, at least get in front of.
Because, you know, well, the can stock goes up.
Mm-hmm. Friday. Tomorrow? Yes.
I think there might be one next Wednesday. And I know there's one the 9th of March. Mm-hmm. I'm going to that one.
Curtis?
This is going to be a dumb question because I'm not letting you share. Is the president going to send out that email again?
Yeah.
So when?
We'll have to ask Gary. He was drafting something.
Gary's not going to draft anything. I'm going to... Amy sent me the email. I'm going to...
It went out March 23rd last year.
Look at it. Right. We want it to go out a lot earlier than that, probably. Mm-hmm. So
okay, sure.
I'll revise it. And
okay.
Put it back to Amy.
I have a copy of it. Anybody want to read it?
It's fairly long.
So, Temp, I wanted to let you know that I'm working with Paul to schedule some meetings with Trillium staff, and I hope that at one of them you'll be able to help me have that conversation with staff about getting involved. I don't have the dates yet.
So you want to give me notice?
Mm-hmm. Yep, he's still working on the dates. It's probably going to be two meetings.
Two meetings at Trillium?
Yep.
Or can I put Trillium staff?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The website will be good to go by tomorrow. Is that what you said?
The
17th, yes.
Because that's what's been
offered. And
on the fire.
And do we have a lot more CF flyers that people can
Well, I brought these so people can take how many you think you might need for your area to hang up. And
I'll take what's left after.
300 is going out to the building and some ambassadors.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm having trouble speaking. And then to the HR contact.
Oh, good. Any other thoughts on kind of outreach at this point? Getting some FaceTime? Yay. Facebook.
Facebook ads, yeah.
Oh,
we're doing Facebook ads.
Oh, ads. I think it's Facebook and something.
Next item on our list is the staff engagement survey resolution. So I don't know if anyone had any other feedback. I want to thank Beth and Linda and whoever else offered their comments. There's a couple slight changes, so I sent out the revised one. And thanks, Ari, for initially crafting the resolution. So do we need discussion at all? Any thoughts?
I found one typo this morning when I looked at it.
Sure.
There were two words crammed together. I don't know if I was looking at it all.
Which two words?
Or not. I might have been looking at an old campus-wide. Should that be one word or two?
Campus-wide
is one word. It is one word?
The word doesn't believe that. If we could put a...
Yeah, and my spell checker was, like, thrown off.
All right, the writing guru, is it one word or hyphenated word?
One word.
Okay. I'm looking at you because you guys write.
I would put a hyphen between it.
You can do either, but I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah,
like,
you
asked. No, no, any other thoughts, comments, questions? Move forward with the vote.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We also got yeses from Kat and Gary.
No.
No no's. That came to me and who's not here. Trisha did not submit anything to me, so I don't know how we record that.
I'm going to ask her right now. No.
Thank you. Excellent. Thank you. I will let you know what we hear back. All right. Moving forward, we had a very brief meeting with Mary, Beth, and Leslie and I, and she was happy to hear we were going forward with this as a resolution. She thought that was an excellent idea, so she thanked us for that. We talked briefly about kind of staff awards and things, and coming to the consensus that it's not, the George Peter Award isn't enough. So thinking about other ways of acknowledging people, they're looking at some HR awards, like an award for supervisors, an award...
Employee of the Month and Supervisor of the Month.
Right. Or things. So they're looking at taking some ownership. So George Peter would still remain ours, and it would be kind of this big thing, but that there would be some smaller awards happening along the way so that there's more continuous acknowledgement of folks. She also talked about kind of going above and beyond awards for people who've taken on, you know, extra big projects and things like that, because there are a lot of big projects and stuff happening on campus.
So she was looking at sort of three different nomination mechanisms. So the Peter Award would remain a peer-nominated award. The Employee of the Month would be supervisors acknowledging staff,
mm-hmm.
and then the Supervisor of the Month would be staff acknowledging supervisors. And she imagined that there could be EA involvement in the Employee of the Month,
mm-hmm.
But not in the Supervisor of the Month, because that could become a sticky wicket for us.
Mm-hmm.
First?
Oh, I just had a suggestion in terms of recognition. I know that we as a university, I don't even know if it's a university policy, but like maybe even recognizing staff like when it's their birthday, or like I know we do 5, 10, 15, mm-hmm. 20 year employees, but like it's just, mm-hmm. people might not even stay that long, but it's yearly, you might recognize like you've been here for a year, here's a card, keep up. I mean, I just think only recognizing staff when they do something beyond and great is a little difficult, because I feel like every staff thinks they're working hard right now and they want to be recognized.
Mm-hmm. Some supervisors do that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We used to.
Really, well, I mean, I know it's a supervisor, but it's not a university-wide really policy.
Linda, since you're in HR, do you have any thought? I mean, I don't know about the birthday recognition thing, because some people don't like to acknowledge their birth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I know that. But
right.
But even like, you've been on mm-hmm. at Cornell for a year, here's mm-hmm. just a little card signed by.
Well, the university recognizes five.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's hard to get people at that point, definitely.
But supervisors ought to take it upon themselves to do that. I don't think mm-hmm. the university is responsible
right.
every anniversary year.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you would be doing it. It would need to be a full-time job for someone.
All the turnover that we have.
We used to do it in campus life. We did birthdays and anniversaries for every single person in campus life, and it was practically
a
full-time job. The number of cards, and they hand-signed every card.
Oh, my God.
And so my hand would get tired, and every month we'd get a chunk of them. It's just, it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
So to imagine doing that on a university level. Yeah. Oh, and we got movie tickets.
But kind of tying into that, you know, we've got a kudos thing, and we could be throwing out some kudos to people. So, like Curtis, I would love to, and I can't remember her name. Lisa, what's your supervisor's last name?
Schaefer.
So I would love to kudos Lisa, if that's okay with you, for acknowledging your work on the Employee Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So... All right, so I will send you a kudos on that.
You know, the other thing that I think it might be done in little units, but there's a lot of things that people accomplish and achieve around the university, whether it's getting an employee degree,
mm-hmm.
finishing their employee degree, or getting a certain credential, certification,
mm-hmm.
professional recognition for something, getting a paper submitted to a
mm-hmm.
conference. And it would be nice if there was a way that we could celebrate some of those other accomplishments that people have, professional accomplishments
mm-hmm.
that they're proud of. In some cases, not even necessarily work-related.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody could be an artist on the side and have their artwork highlighted.
So the question is, how do we get, you know...
For the work-related, you know, recognitions, there are people who've gotten recognized for one reason or another, or even within the profession
mm-hmm.
where they've gotten. So that's always an avenue, but it goes right to what Tanya was going to say, which is how do you get those?
Right.
So I guess my question would be, like, I'm just thinking there are people who go through, say, the Supervisory Development Program or the HALCRAFT Program or any of those programs. maybe something that we do is get in touch with the people who run those programs to say, can you give us a list? When you've got a class that graduates, can you give us a list? And then we kudos them.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, congratulations to so-and-so or someone who completes an eCornell or something like that.
Yeah. It might be nice for us to interact with people who've gone through that program mm-hmm. where we could do something to sit down and talk with them mm-hmm. as the voice of employees and recognize them. Mm-hmm. Talk about the importance of their role as a supervisor or leader. So that's the only, and one of the things we were looking at in one of the subcommittees, the UA subcommittees, is doing recognizing supervisors who really support work-life and work-life balance. That was kind of back-burner temporarily, but that was an award we were looking at bringing forward because we think it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the nice thing about that is when other people across the university see those things, they may be more open to saying, oh, there are a lot of work-life programs going on. I should support this when my staff is asking for it instead of being hesitant about it.
Exactly.
So then it opens
exactly.
up doors. Too.
And those particularly would make good stories mm-hmm. because then, you know, you could make a story as to what the situation was that led to this need for addressing mm-hmm. the work-life thing, and then people could see that there's more creative ways of addressing things than just...
Exactly, and that's what we were hoping for, is that we could even get employees who would come forward and say, this is the difference my supervisor made in my mm-hmm. life by being willing to be a little bit flexible, and I'm still doing my job great and mm-hmm. you know, able to achieve really good balance because of it. So that's really what we were looking to do. So it sounds like it's something we should probably reconsider bringing back forth to consider. We kind of back-burnered it with what's mm-hmm. been going on in the last couple mm-hmm. of years.
Any other thoughts on acknowledging people? Does anybody have anyone that they can think of right now that they want to kudos that we can put in the EAE news that's about to go out?
We could just think about it or encourage our colleagues to think about it because we just want to kind of piece that up because we're supposed to be having a lot.
I'm gonna do one for Cheryl McGraw as well because she coordinates all of the. Like employee celebration day, she coordinates all of the volunteers for all of those programs. She does a really great job at it, so just acknowledging that as well. So if people could just think about it, it doesn't have to be something that's personal to you, but something that you can say, oh, this person has been really great.
Well, another one that comes to mind is Paul Streeter, who chaired the United Way, Cornell United Way mm-hmm. campaign this year because we met our goal already. And he's
so
done a really good job. I can mm-hmm. talk about that.
Do you think we could extend it to Geneva? So perhaps when we have our meeting there, we could have a kudos lunch for Geneva employees?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If I can try and sell it a little
bit
to Geneva staff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Think about that. Mm-hmm. People on site. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll do the whole thing.
So if anybody can think of other people that we can kudos, it'd be great to have a half a dozen or so to go out in this next EAE news and really kind of get the ball rolling. So we've got three... four right now. Okay. Moving on to minutes. Anybody have time to take a look at the meeting minutes?
Well, I did.
Go ahead, send out your corrections.
Gosh. Well, Amy, you missed your own initial.
Yeah.
And probably did. Yeah. Under author amending. In section number 4A, report from the chair, I don't remember for sure, but in the sentence that reads, Mary also suggested the George Peter Award improve their guidelines and suggested the EA develop smaller, less formal award for staff. Was that EA or was that HR?
I don't think she suggested us. She just suggested the development of a smaller
award
but didn't say us or them.
I don't want us to be implicated in that.
So scratch the EA.
And then also the next section about, within that paragraph still, the benefits pool. Mm-hmm. What will increase is the cost. The pool itself, there's something about the way that that's written.
Let's see. A couple weeks ago, Paul Bursting and she reported the benefits pool. The it's actually the fringe rate will increase.
The fringe rate, yeah, that's what it is.
So replace benefits pool.
Yeah, with fringe rate.
Fringe rate, yeah. And then under University Diversity Council, Tanya and I were both at the meeting, so... it wasn't just me there. And then in the third sentence, the protocol was originally formed in the 90s, not the committee.
And I feel like, no, Linda, I don't think you passed around the amount, did you?
No,
you
I
just described
it.
Benefits committee was not me, it was Leslie Morris who talked about it. And you might want to look at this sentence, the last sentence in this section, because I'm not sure that it was accurate, but it was your report.
So that's the select benefits. She could say the select benefits. Wait, no. She reported the new medical select benefits cap
is decreasing too.
Right.
It will be decreased too. It's not yet, right. But next year I think it decreases.
Okay. She reported that the select benefits cap will be
reduced.
Will
be reduced to $2,500
in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some changes on the FSAT part, which is everyone's looking out. Okay. I can go through a meeting if you'd like. It's just really sensitive because it hasn't gone out yet, so I just really wanted to make sure that we're trying to be really careful about the wording on it.
Any other changes to the minutes?
Can we approve these next time then? Because there's a substantial,
right.
Not just adjusting, you know, names. Yep. Can I redo this and we vote on it next time?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, moving on to committee reports. You want to talk about the
very briefly.
Calendar?
The calendar committee has been meeting. I've attended 3 meetings. They now have developed a set of principles that describe how they want the academic calendar to be created, and are going to be vetting those with the key stakeholder, the big leadership folks, Susan Murphy, David Sporton, those folks first, and then another layer of stakeholders, which includes us. So that will be coming, those recommendations will be coming to us in the near future. For an eventual rollout to the whole community. So they're not going to propose a calendar, they're going to propose the principles under which a calendar would be created.
So the underlying wish is that everything coordinates with other sort of events around the community? Is that what the purpose of the calendar?
No, the purpose of the committee, if this is related to the stuff that Tim was talking about in terms of student mental health, to try to create a more balanced academic environment for students.
Okay.
So, for example, there's only one long break in the spring. There are 2 short breaks in the fall. So looking at when the breaks happen, about how long the winter break is, how long the summer break is, those kinds of things.
Okay.
But there are also New York State rules that we have to follow about the number of days that students are in the classroom in a semester. All that. So there are all these different components.
Mm-hmm.
It's very complicated. And there are only 365 days in a year.
Right.
So there's only so much to work with.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I attended my first Faculty Senate meeting.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Very different from the Employee Assembly. It's much larger. They meet in Golden Smith in the Hollis Auditorium. There were 57 voting members there. And they vote with clickers.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Which is kind of different, but in the last year they have passed 6 resolutions. One was at the meeting where I was, and they talked about 2 at the meeting I attended. One was a resolution on protocols to ensure faculty governance, which was a response to the Africana decision and the Education Department decision. That one was passed, and then one that was sent back to committee was a resolution on academic work during breaks. They couldn't agree on the language. So that was, it was I didn't know what to expect, and it was not at all what I expected.
I attended meetings, a meeting for the Retirement Plan Oversight Committee. Basically, we are meeting because the retirement plan will be required to change in the next couple years. Right now, people can kind of do whatever they want with their retirement plan. You can kind of pick your own funds, and the government doesn't like that all that much because a lot of people don't necessarily know what choices that they're making, and some people are making bad choices. So what the goal is we are going to be selecting a new company to work with us, potentially a new company to work with us, who will look at all of our various retirement options and offer us kind of a list of funds that people will have access to. And so you would be able to go and say, these are, you know, this is a group of funds that are doing well. If you part your money into these, they're good choices, kind of thing. It's likely right now we're exploring an option that there will still be a brokerage window. So if you really are a high finance person and you want to dabble in your own retirement, you can, but essentially then Cornell will not be at fault if you make bad choices. But ultimately, this committee will be vetting the options and voting on them. So if we make a wrong choice, we're kind of responsible for that. So we're trying to be a little bit better at giving people good, strong options for retirement. So that's where we are. We'll be meeting with potential. We're putting out a request for proposal for potential vendors, and we'll be meeting with them and make some decisions in the next couple months. Linda?
Okay, there's two subcommittees that I'm on, and actually Beth chairs one of the two, that each of them have a kind of hot topic that we're talking about right now that I just wanted to put out here just because I think it's very possible that in the near-term future we're going to be hearing about it. The first one kind of piggybacks on what Leslie was talking about in terms of the calendar, and the Child Care Services Subcommittee right now is exploring how we might be able to work the local districts to try to get more syncing up of the Cornell calendar with the local school calendar, because we know right now, yeah, that was kind of what we are. I'm going to get to that. So that committee is very interested in that topic right now. There's a new superintendent of schools in Ithaca who get very open-minded.
Very wonderful.
And so we're hoping that we may be able to take advantage of that, as well all the local area school superintendents. This is the time of the year that they all meet at BOCES together to kind of talk about the upcoming year. So we're hoping to maybe be able to make at least a little bit of headway on that. So that's that committee. And then on the Family Services Committee, one of the things that we've been taking a look at is the tax burden on same-sex partner benefits. And that's not anything Cornell does, that's an IRS ruling, but it really creates a hardship for same-sex partners who one of the partners is not a Cornell employee who have to pay taxes on that on the medical benefits. Some employers, and we're looking at Syracuse University right now, who helps those couples with being able to provide a little bit of tax relief. So it's something we're exploring right now. It's very near and dear to the committee's heart. And so if we do continue to move forward with that, it may come here to ask for support from this committee. So that's why I just wanted to bring it out there.
So Linda, can I ask a question about the first committee you talked about? Is the Child Care Committee? Is that
Child Care Services Subcommittee.
Services. My question is, are you anticipating that the school systems would change their schedule or that Cornell would change its schedule?
Well, we're not sure what direction. It might be a little bit of both, because we have a member of Faculty Senate who's on that committee and who is talking about the academic calendar piece and is going to try to liaise our piece there.
So is it somebody who's on the academic calendar committee?
I'm not sure if he's on the committee.
Who is it?
Steve Morgan.
He hasn't been to any of the meetings.
Okay, he may not be on that committee specifically, but he is a member of Faculty Senate, so he said he was going to try to work through that piece of things. We are more going towards the districts, and that's why Lynette Barty reached out to the city school superintendent, and we're trying to work that angle and see what we can do. So that's more to come on both of those, but I just really wanted to put them on our radar because I think it's something that eventually may make its way here on both.
Any questions?
No, I just think that I need to tell Bill Fry about this because it fits in with what's mm-hmm. going on that other committee. Mm-hmm. So I made a note to do that.
Okay. It's very possible that Steve Morgan's already said something.
It's possible.
He was going to try to be our liaison with the faculty senate.
Leslie, quick.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of the stuff already, but the ComCom met last week, and things are rolling along. So they all have flyers. They're getting them out there in a variety of different ways. And we have a big ad coming out in the email. So the president's going to go out, and there's stuff in the paw print. So things are moving along.
And we're going to have a little block in the chronicle that turns out.
Good. And we're meeting again in another week.
Linda, you want to jump in? Soup and Hope, see if we can get that?
Yes, on Soup and Hope. I've confirmed that the EA will serve soup on March 31st. I know I definitely can make it, and Tommy said she definitely can make it. We'll need at least two more people. And March 17th is still open. And they said if we want to take 2 days, I know I can't on the 17th because I have another meeting, but if we can find four members who are interested in serving on the 17th, we can also take that date. But I've already said, yes, we'll definitely take the 31st. So it's the 17th that I'm just throwing out there. If anybody thinks that they'd be available and would want to do the 17th too, we can also still take that date.
So thank you. You've got Celie said she could do the 31st.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can do the 31st. I can also do the 17th.
I can do one or the other.
I can probably do the 17th as well. So,
Less and Leslie Moore said she could do either. Anyone else?
17.
Okay, so it looks like we've got.
Is that where we need more people?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you can get there a little bit before 12 o'clock, so we can get set up and everything, people start coming at 12, everybody knows where to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we can do materials.
Yeah, we can bring materials, so it would be a good opportunity to maybe bring.
It's at noon.
So that's why I can get there a little bit early so we can set up. That'd be great. So I'll go ahead and let her know that we have enough people for the 17th too.
Great.
That'd be great. And we now have put a little snippet in the employee assembly news about Soup and Hope. So
great. So I think since we don't really have time to talk about the civility thing that you and Celie were working at, can we talk about that at our next meeting? Or
yeah, it was just going to be, we've met, we're developing
okay.
a list,
cool.
There will be more to come.
Okay.
So,
excellent.
Yep.
We've got 30 seconds. Anyone have anything? Old business, new business?
Oh, just real quickly, I don't know if you've been reading the Cornell Daily Sun, but there's been interesting articles about staff
reductions.
Yeah. There was an article in Monday's paper, and then there was a nice editorial, really nice written editorial related to that in yesterday's Sun. So you get a chance to take a look at them.
Mm-hmm.
I just got some feedback about that, and people seem to call me when they don't know what to do. So this is now the second time I've been called, but after that first article that was in the Sun, people are looking at it saying, no, that's not true. We're not doing the work. I think there was a quote in the article that says 800 people laid off, but the work is still getting done just fine.
It's not.
Yeah, that particular quote was very inflammatory.
It was very inflammatory. So, I heard from people, I don't know if you have, but I just want it on our radar because I don't know what to do with this information.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not sure either.
That's what
the editorial was in response
mm-hmm.
to.
Okay.
Yeah. They were saying, that's really not mm-hmm. happening. And if our focus is on faculty retention, they want to know that they have a strong support staff and, who's lying. It's not really happening. So
that's what that is. But I seem to be hearing from people who are stretched to the limit.
Mm-hmm.
And cost-saving measures that are happening, like Kowali, or all the new systems that are coming, all the rearranging of the business service centers are hitting them at the same time as they're crunched already, and people's heads are ready to spin off, is what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody, mm-hmm. but for the ones who it's happening to, it's bad.
Yeah,
And I think, I'm guessing that a lot of it is falling on the shoulders of people who are more in the, really in the lower end. So the ones who are really supporting the rest.
The two people I heard from are directors and managers.
No kidding.
And they are afraid to say anything because they are directors and managers.
So I was going to say, do you think it would be beneficial for us at our next meeting to make this business of the day, and we could spend some time talking about how we can help foster that discussion?
Right. We will do that.
Anything else? Anyone?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right.
Go. Thank you.
Oh, I'm going to try to make the transportation advisory council.
I got your email
this
morning, and I did check into that.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.